that, of course, is, and not only that, but her, the particular issue that surrounds herself and her family does include concerns around the grooming for sexual abuse of young men. And so right there, having that person be the head of the Department of Education is, let's say, notable.
Greetings, I'm Chuck Foster. Join me at 2 p.m. Sundays for Reggae Central, playing ska, rock steady, roots, dub, and dancehall. New releases, old favorites, and delightful obscurities right here on KPFK 90.7 FM in L.A.
You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles.
Good afternoon and welcome to Middle East in Focus. I'm Negwa Ibrahim. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Sunday that Israel would move to expand settlements in the occupied and illegally annexed Golan Heights, exploiting the collapse of the Assad government to further entrench its control of Syrian land. Netanyahu said in a statement Sunday that strengthening the Golan Heights is synonymous with, quote, strengthening the state of Israel, end quote, and declared, quote, we will continue to hold on to it, make it flourish, and settle in it, end quote. According to Netanyahu's office, the Israeli government has unanimously approved the prime minister's push to double the settler population in the Golan Heights. There are currently dozens of Israeli settlements housing roughly 20,000 people in the territory, the bulk of which Israel unlawfully annexed in 1981 after occupying it during the 1967 war. Israel's settlement expansion plan has sparked outrage from countries in the region, with Turkey's foreign ministry condemning the decision Sunday as, quote, a new stage in Israel's goal of expanding its borders through occupation, end quote. The foreign ministry of Saudi Arabia accused Israel of sabotaging Syria's, quote, prospects for restoring its security and stability, end quote. The kingdom also reaffirms that the occupied Golan is Syrian Arab land. Now, since the opposition forces toppled Syrian President Bashar al-Assad on December 8th, Israel has carried out hundreds of airstrikes on Syria and has also sent troops into a United Nations-patrolled buffer zone in the occupied Golan Heights and beyond, calling it a defensive and temporary measure. However, such moves by Israel have been widely condemned internationally. And on Friday, Israeli forces shot and wounded a Syrian protester demonstrating against the army's presence in a border village in southern Syria. Israeli fire injured the man, identified by local media as Meher el-Hussein, in the leg, on Friday as protesters gathered in the town to demand an end to the Israeli military presence in the area. Israel's push for a settlement expansion in the Golan Heights comes amid the country's large-scale genocidal assault on the Gaza Strip, which Israeli forces are preparing to occupy indefinitely. President-elect Donald Trump's return to power in the United States is expected to embolden the far-right forces in Netanyahu's government that are seeking to return settlements to Gaza and to annex the West Bank. Netanyahu said in a video statement that he had, quote, a very friendly, warm, and important discussion with Trump late Saturday about the future of the Middle East. He also went on to say, quote, I said we would change the Middle East, and we are doing so. I discussed with President-elect Trump the need to complete the victory, end quote. Since October 7th of 2023, Israel has conducted more than 17,000 attacks in five countries, including the occupied Palestinian territory, Lebanon, Syria, Yemen, and Iran. And this is all according to the analyzed data from the Armed Conflict Location and Event Data Project. As Mitchell Plitnick writes in his most recent piece about Israel's recent attacks in Syria, quote, Unsurprisingly, the United States has called this blatant and wholly unprovoked aggression an act of self-defense by Israel. As with the genocide in Gaza, even where there is sharp criticism, there is no threat of consequences. That's true for the United States. And it's also true for the Arab states that have some means to impose consequences on Israel, Jordan, Egypt, United Arab Emirates, and Bahrain, none of whom have even hinted they might consider severing their relations with Israel. International law and norms of international relations simply don't exist anymore, not even to the feeble extent they did once. Given that it is already clear that no one is going to stop Israel, we have to ask what Israel's goals in Syria are, end quote. So with us today to discuss Israel's unprovoked, illegal invasion of Syria since the fall of former President Bashar al-Assad, and Israel's real goals in Syria and the region as a whole, all with the support of the United States, is our guest, Mitchell Plitnik, a political analyst and writer, and also a former guest on Middle East in Focus, and we're very excited to have him back. He is the president of Rethinking Foreign Policy and is co-author with Mark Lamont Hill of Except for Palestine, The Limits of Progressive Politics. Mitchell writes the Cutting Through newsletter at Substack and publishes a weekly column at MondoWeiss.net. Mitchell's previous positions include vice president at the Foundation for Middle East Peace, director of the U.S. Office of B'Tselem, the Israeli Information Center for Human Rights in the Occupied Territories, and co-director of Jewish Voice for Peace, where he currently serves on the board of directors. Mitchell Plitnik, welcome back to Middle East in Focus for our part two of our conversation about what's happening in the Middle East, what's happening in Syria, and what to expect under a Trump administration. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Well, thanks so much for having me back. Always a pleasure to be here.
So I am glad that we were able to bring you back for this part two conversation. Half an hour is definitely never enough time with you. So we're very excited to be able to tap into your expertise. One of the things I really appreciate is the fact that you are writing about what Israel is doing in Syria. Unfortunately, I have to say I'm not finding enough being written about it. So really, really appreciate your work and your recent piece on this. I'm going to jump right in. You state in your most recent article about Israel's invasion of Syria that, quote, after 5 decades of low-level conflict between the two countries, Israel saw an opportunity to change the calculus and seized it, end quote. Now, before we get into Israel's recent invasion of Syria following Assad's ouster, could you provide a brief overview of this low-level conflict between Israel and Syria prior to the recent removal of Bashar al-Assad?
Yeah, sure. So the 1973 war is the last time that Israel and Syria really went at each other in a severe way. And that war ended in a ceasefire. Eventually, that ceasefire turned into a peace treaty with Egypt, of course, but it never did with Syria. There was simply a ceasefire. So for 50 years, that ceasefire held. And it was not perfect. It was not completely peaceful in the sense that everyone was getting along, but it was, you know, relatively free of the two sides shooting at each other, which was a fairly dramatic change. Syria had been one of the sites of real opposition to the state of Israel, both before it was created and for its first 20-25 years of existence. And there were frequent attacks from Syria, and those largely stopped over the course of 50 years. Assad, in order to in order to maintain this is Hafez al-Assad, Bashar al-Assad's father, in order to maintain and regain some of the territory that he lost to Israel in 1973 and 1967, agreed to basically have a buffer zone where and agreed to basically stop attacks on Israel. And he did. For 50 years, there were no real attacks. The main issue for Israel in Syria was that Syria was the sort of go-between, the overland route that got weapons from Iran or, you know, before that other places into Lebanon and to militias in the region. But beyond that, there really wasn't much confrontation between the two countries. There was a sort of grudging stability. It's not that they were in any way allies or working together, although at times they found common cause. Most of the time, Israel and Syria were cold neighbors. And that, you know, again, that held until Assad fell.
So I want to ask one quick follow-up on this. So prior to Assad's fall, mm-hmm. my understanding is since October 7th, 2023, that mm-hmm. And then prior to Assad's fall, that Israel was actually still was engaging in some attacks in Syria.
Yeah.
Am I wrong about that? Or
no, you're not wrong about that. And it was before that as well. But again, these were mostly directed at Iranian forces, Hezbollah forces, and, you know, of course, they're right there with Syrian forces. They were partnering with them. The main goal for Israel was disrupting the chain between Iran and Lebanon. And of course, that meant Syrian forces as well. Now, there are other exceptions. When Syria was developing nuclear power, Israel bombed their nuclear reactor, which was a pretty big deal back. This was, I believe, 2007, if memory serves me correctly. So there have been incidents, and I don't want to suggest that there haven't been, but nothing like what we're, you know, nothing like the all out assault that we're seeing now from either side.
So now let's talk about what we're seeing now. And one of the things that I really appreciated about your piece is that you did not hold back in really shattering the illusion that Israel is trying to create in terms of presenting its invasion of Syria as if it's an act of self-defense. So now can you discuss how since Assad's fall, Israel has been engaging, as you importantly frame it, an unprovoked invasion of Syria?
Yeah, and I think it's really unfortunate that, you know, that there are not many others out there who are framing it in this way. It is, especially in the mainstream. I mean, you just don't see this. Even if they don't actually call it an act of self-defense by Israel, they don't call it what it is. It's an invasion, and there's really no other way. This is the very definition of an invasion. There have been hundreds and hundreds of bombing attacks. There is the capture of Syrian territory. And all of this happened with no provocation, nothing, no Syrian party at all did anything. I mean, they had far bigger concerns and more direct and immediate concerns for themselves as the, you know, as Assad was falling and did fall. They had bigger concerns for themselves than Israel. That's not what they were concerned with. And so there's just no way that you can characterize this as anything other than an unprovoked assault. And I think further, even if, as initially Israel claimed that their bombings were aimed at Syria's, what's left of Syria's chemical weapons stockpile, which it's unclear what's even there, if there's really anything much at all. But fine, even if you would say that, well, Israel has a legitimate concern to make sure that chemical weapons don't fall into who knows whose hands, which would still not permit them to go. And I want to be very clear, it would still be a major crime for them to go into Syria and just bomb sites unprovoked. But even if you were going to say that this was a legitimate case of self-defense to the extent that there were chemical weapons, Israel's gone very clearly beyond any sort of weapons of mass destruction, and has been quite clear. They have stated that they have destroyed over 85% of Syria's military capabilities. That means, you know, everything from individual weapons that a soldier might carry to whatever anti-aircraft defense systems Syria has. Those are completely destroyed. Syria's what little Navy Syria had is completely destroyed. What Air Force Syria had is almost completely destroyed. So Israel has not made any secret of the fact that they've gone well beyond that initial lame excuse. There's just really no other way to characterize this but an invasion, when you consider the fact that not only has Syria not done anything to provoke such actions, they have, even as Israel has taken these actions, they have scrupulously avoided any sort of retaliation, and yet Israel continues to hold this territory. It is as blatant an invasion as the Soviet tanks rolling into Czechoslovakia after World War II. There's just no other way to characterize it. And it's shocking to me that so few people are calling this what it so obviously is.
So can you elaborate on how? So let me back up. One of the things you and I talked about in my opening that you talk about in your piece is that international law and norms of international relations simply don't exist anymore, as we're seeing in the context of Israel's just blatant, unprovoked invasion of Syria, and that it doesn't even exist to the feeble extent that it did once. Can right. you, if you don't mind, and I apologize if I'm putting you on the spot, sort of lay out how this is a violation of international law and norms of international relations?
Well, the most fundamental piece of the UN Charter, the most basic building block of the United Nations Charter, the reason, if you would whittle down the existence of the United Nations to one reason, to one idea, it is that nations do not go to war against other nations in anything other than the most extreme self-defense. And that's why, in theory, that's why the Security Council exists. The Security Council is supposed to exist to make sure that doesn't happen, and that if a country has a legitimate case where, you know, and of course the classic example would probably be the rise of the Nazis in the 1930s and the beginnings of their aggression, if there's a legitimate case for that, the Security Council agrees, yes, you have the right to defend yourself, and you know, this is authorized use of force. This has just been completely thrown out the window. There's just no concept of that. Everything has now become, in terms of Israel, has become self-defense. You can call almost anything self-defense, and by that standard, any country can claim self-defense. Why, to use a fairly obvious example, why is Israel, or how could we argue that Israel claiming that it is acting in self-defense completely destroys Syria's military, even though that military has not, in recent memory, been used against Israel? Even threatened Israel in any way. Why is that acceptable? But Russia invading Ukraine, when there are clearly issues between those two, the two countries have been, you know, engaged in a low level conflict for 8 years before that invasion. Why is that illegal? Why do we call that? And it is illegal. It is right to call that illegal. It is right to oppose that. It is right to say this was an enormous war crime. But by what standard, then, can we say it's an enormous war crime? I mean, I can say it because I believe what Israel's doing is an enormous war crime. But if you don't believe that, how can you accuse Russia of it? It makes no sense. There's no logic to it. So when the law is simply applied in a way that for example the United States has standards for its friends and for its enemies, when that's how the law is applied, there is no actual law. It's simply the law of the jungle, And even further, another of the most basic issues for in the UN Charter is the inadmissibility of the acquisition of territory by the use of force. Now, we've heard this many, many times in terms of the territories that Israel occupied in 1967, but they just did it again. They just went and did it again. They just grabbed up Syrian territory, said, here we are now. As you pointed out, they shot someone for being in that territory. Today, they arrested two people for allegedly spying for what they said was Hezbollah. But of course, if Israel wasn't there, they wouldn't be spying for anyone. So they're acting as if that territory is now theirs, or at least occupied and under their jurisdiction, if not their actual sovereignty. And again, basic violation of international law. And nobody, not the Arab states, not the security, even at the Security Council, Syria has lodged a complaint there. But of course, that will not go anywhere because the U.S. will veto. Nobody's saying anything. Nobody's doing anything to stop them. Certainly not the United States, but not in Europe either. As you noted, and as I mentioned in my article, not even in the Arab world, where there are states that could do something and that actually hit Israel, maybe not all that hard, maybe not hard enough to convince them to change their policies, but could cause some loss to Israel as a result of these actions. They're not doing it either. So, I mean, when nobody's even trying to hold Israel to any standard, there is no law. And really, there is no law anymore.
This is Middle East in Focus, and we are talking today about Israel's unprovoked illegal invasion of Syria since the fall of former President Bashar al-Assad, and Israel's real goals in Syria and the region, all with the support of the United States, with our guest Mitchell Plitnik, political analyst and writer. He's the president of Rethinking Foreign Policy and is co-author with Mark Lamont Hill of Except for Palestine, The Limits of Progressive Politics. He also serves on the board of directors of Jewish Voice for Peace. Oh, my God, we have so much more to talk about in only 10 minutes. So here I go. You're talking about its land grab. Israel is doing even more land grab in Syria, which is also part of its violation of the 1974 agreement on disengagement. Can you talk about this agreement, the 1974 agreement on disengagement, how Israel has shattered it with what it's doing in Syria right now after the fall of Bashar al-Assad? And why, as you put it, Israel's justification for shattering it is absolutely laughable.
Yeah. So again, I touched on some of this already. The area in question is this territory that Israel withdrew from after the 73 war, and after this agreement that was reached in 1974. The thing is that Israel has always kind of wanted that peace. It's basically the rest of the Golan Heights, and particularly a key area called Mount Hermon, which is the highest point in Syria, and from which, first of all, with Israel sitting on top of it, they have a very, very easy time monitoring into Lebanon and into Syria. And when Israel did not have it, it was possible, although difficult, for things, small aircraft, unmanned drones, to conceal themselves from some Israeli detection. That matters less now than it used to, given Israel's sophisticated technology, but it's still something, and it's still something that Israel wanted. So this was just an area that Israel desired, and when the opportunity came that they could make a case, enough of a case so that the United States would call their action self-defense, they took advantage. They went right in and grabbed it and set up that area. Now they're fortifying it. So they're claiming, oh, this is just temporary until we see what shakes out in Syria. That's nonsense. And how do we know it's nonsense? Because just last week, Benjamin Netanyahu announced that he's going to be expanding settlements in the Golan Heights. Now, he's going to put those settlements in the area of the Golan Heights that Israel had already had since 67. But what that means is that now that's the residential area, and the area that Israel just captured is now the so-called buffer zone that keeps sort of insulates the Israeli new Israeli settlements from possible attacks from Syria. This is how Israel expands its borders. They capture land, say this is a buffer zone to protect this area. Then they build up in that captured land, and of course, then they need a new buffer zone, obviously. So they capture more land, say, well, this is just temporary. It's a buffer zone to protect these areas. But then they put more houses in, becomes permanent, and on and on and on. You know, that's just sort of the long term process of expanding Israel's borders. So it is certainly a land grab. It's also something that is motivated by Israel's tactical assessments. But it's all, I think the point is we can look at it that way. But the truth is it's all illegitimate. It's not just illegal. It is fundamentally illegitimate in a way that we shouldn't need treaties or international laws to tell us that it's illegitimate, because this is the kind of thing that causes long-term conflict. You know, when you just willy-nilly capture the land of another country or another people, that is going to cause long-term conflict. That's how long-term conflicts happen. And that can happen in a large scale, like what happened after World War I and the Sykes-Picot Agreement and all the way the Middle East was carved up, or it can happen in a somewhat smaller way, as is happening now by Israel and Syria. And the other part that I think we should also not ignore is that Israel is not the only party doing illegal things in Syria. The United States, of course, has its military forces in southern Syria, as Trump likes to say, where the quote-unquote oil is, but also Turkey. Turkey has been battling Kurdish forces in northern Syria for many, many years, and it's moved much more aggressively, particularly because they're the ones that back HTS, the main group that overthrew Assad. And they are asserting themselves in northern Syria. So while Turkey is talking and saying nice words about what Israel is doing and being very critical, it's committing its own crimes in a different part of Syria, although the context is different and it's not quite as, I would say, as egregious as what Israel is doing.
So we only have 2 minutes. So I'm gonna ask one big question. Can you talk about how Netanyahu's really utilizing this moment in Syria as, and you talk about this in your piece, as an opportunity to redraw the entire political map of the Middle East? Can you elaborate on this? And what do you think U.S. foreign policy in Syria will look like under a Trump administration? And how might Trump support Syria in its ongoing attempts to redraw the political map of the Middle East, including its efforts in Syria?
I have to talk fast. I think what Netanyahu has done here by destroying Syria's ability to defend itself, it doesn't matter now who takes over in Syria. Whoever it is going to depend on outside forces for defense. That is, and I think we're seeing from the way not only HTS, but its leader, Mohammed al-Jalani, are behaving, they recognize this and they know that they just can't afford to do anything that is going to antagonize Israel or the United States, because they're going to depend on them going forward to rebuild Syria, to defend Syria. Syria has basically become a complete vassal state. There's just no other way. They're going to be dependent on outside forces for their economy. They're going to be dependent on outside forces for their defense. And they're not going to get that kind of help from Russia or Iran, the allies of the former regime. So they have to get them from the West. This means that basically the Syrian state, at least in the American and Israeli vision, is going to be a vassal state, a puppet state, that will have no choice but to obey essentially the whims of the hegemon. And I think that's what they are driving towards. And I think that's why not only why Israel destroyed all of Syria's military capabilities, but why the United States has backed them in doing so, because that's exactly what they want. Not only have they gotten Russia out, they've now created a state that is completely dependent on them. And that is going to mean that Israel will have a lot more freedom of action, and so will the United States, in terms of aggression against Shia militias in Iraq, and against, obviously, Iran. And I think that's what, you know, everything Netanyahu does is about toppling the regime in Iran. It's all geared towards that long term, even when he doesn't exactly know how it's going to lead there. And I think that's what this is. And I think that the United States is absolutely behind him. The question is, well, with the Trump administration coming in, now you're dealing with people who have no idea what's going on. The you know, people like Antony Blinken, Lloyd Austin, they know what's going on. They understand Israel's project. They understand American goals in the region, which are not always the same as Israel's. They have a very clear vision of what they want to do. I don't believe that's going to be true of Trump. And I think Trump is going to very likely want to hold on to the parts of Syria that the United States is controlling now, because that's where their few oil resources are concentrated. I think that's something that Trump is going to want to do, and it's going to be very hard for him to do that without increasing American troop presence. And again, if he does that, it just makes U.S. troops a greater target, and you know, increases the potential.